to tell you. About 100 years ago, Mother Jones says there's no justice in West Virginia. Amen, Sister Jones, because that's still true today. There's no justice in West Virginia. Over 100 years ago, the greed and corruption of the coal industry stole our great state. We're here to take it back today, starting with Coal River Mountain. The pro-coal thugs talk about patriotism, but yet they support a Russian coal company that bombs our Appalachian communities. Is that patriotism? Pro-coal is anti-American. I praise our Senator Robert Byrd for recently speaking out. But dear honorable Senator, they're not listening to you. Their arrogance and their greed has consumed their souls. Honk if you love mountains! 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 Honk, honk, baby, honk! Coal has corrupted our state government, and the feds need to come in and take over the state government of West Virginia, all the way from the governor to the dog catcher, especially the governor of West Virginia. Guys, the things that we say and do here today is for our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, so that they'll have a chance to live, so they'll have basic human rights and basic life necessities. No matter what consequences today to me or to you or anyone in the present day, the time has come to stand up and say, stop poisoning our babies! Stop poisoning our babies! Our children will read and will hear about our struggles. Thank God for the internet. They'll hear about our struggle for their future and to save their lives. So I ask you to remember that. And keep that close to your heart when the struggle is the hardest every day. Keep that close to your heart. The whole world is watching Appalachia. The whole world is listening about Coal River Mountain. We are ground zero to save the earth, the only place we know is home. Always know that I love you and I honor you. Onward, onward to save our species, never back down. Thank you.
Never give up, never surrender. Thank you, Judy. Up next, a speaker by proxy, if you will. Kat Matea wanted to be here, but she couldn't. So we have a committed activist, Stephanie Pistello, from Appalachian Voices, to share with you a few words of encouragement from Ms. Matea. Stephanie?
Thank you, Bob. So this is from Kathy, and it's a real honor to get to read her words. Honk if you love mountains! Honk if you love mountains! My friends and fellow West Virginians, I regret I couldn't be with you today, but I have been privileged to hear Mr. Kennedy's articulate and passionate stance on this issue, and I hope you're as moved by his words as I was when the first time I heard him speak about mountaintop removal. Also, I am heartened by Senator Byrd's thoughts on mountaintop removal and the larger conversation around coal in general. His thoughtful stance and call for peace and civil discourse raised my hopes immensely and make me proud to be a West Virginian. I've been humbled by the people I've met who are standing up against impossible odds to say, this is not right. Their courage through excruciating anguish, their staunch determination and tenacity have been my inspiration in my whole life. Our friends, Judy, Beau, Vernon, Maria, and the rest, are not fighting with fists or guns. There's no intimidation here, no violence. Honk if you love mountains. Let him hear you, everybody. Woo! As she said, there's no intimidation here and no violence. They're trying to find solutions for everyone so that all people in southern West Virginia can thrive. Solutions such as a wind farm atop Coal River Mountain, a viable alternative to that blatant destruction and interruption of life and safety and peace and sense of place. That can provide sustainable energy and jobs for all. We are asking consideration. We're asking for compassion. We're asking for the real human need and the dreadful cost of the destruction of Coal River Mountain to be seen, to be honored. We're asking to be acknowledged as brother and sisters and fellow West Virginians. If we build the prosperity of some on the exploitation and disregard for others, we all lose. We all lose. No one here, no one is disposable. Not these local environmental activists working so hard to save the beloved mountains and homes, and not the miners and their families who need a source of income, jobs, and security. Can we see each other through our fear, our grief, our rage? Can we extend ourselves to affirm that common humanity and those whom we oppose? We are brothers and sisters in conflict, faced with a common problem. Can we work towards a common solution? Can we? Yes, we can. Everyone wants to feel safe where they live. Thank you. I'm Kathy Matea. Who loves mountains?
Yes, we do. It's time to bring up a man who has been a voice of conscience in the Episcopal Church in West Virginia for a long, long time, who has fulfilled and followed the mission propounded by Jesus Christ in West Virginia, Reverend Jim Lewis.
I don't know. I don't know if I believe in reincarnation or not, but I just heard, and when Judy spoke, I just heard Mother Jones back here in West Virginia. I don't know how many of you remember it. I know a lot of you out there do remember this, but Mother Jones came here to town, to Charleston, right downtown, right on Capitol Street. But before she got to Capitol Street, they arrested her right on the river down here. She was here to talk to Governor Crystal Peter in those days. And she spoke the word, and we heard it today from Judy Bonds, the same Mother Jones back with us here in West Virginia. It's Christmas time, so I can't pass that up, a little bit of time. Also to my brothers and sisters in the Jewish community, happy Hanukkah to you. And also to remember that this is the time we're selling Christmas trees up here. By the way, up close to where Congresswoman Capito's office is. Which means that when you leave here, at least not today maybe, but sometime soon, pay a visit on her and talk with her about these mountains that we want to keep here. I think you've got to remember as we call for our guest speaker to speak here in a moment, that this Jesus that was just mentioned at the Christmas time in our season that means so much to us here in these mountains was the same Jesus who went up on the mountain to deal with the devil and tempted by money and power. And that's exactly what we are doing right here now, going to that mountain which must never be destroyed, so that we can meet the devil face to face, and we know where he is, and say we are going to persevere and these mountains are going to stand forever. It was on these mountains that Jesus went to preach and to teach. And by the way, there's a great old saying that says, if you have to preach, you know, use words, but if you can't, use words if you have to, but preach with your body and with your life. That's where Jesus went, to that mountain. And those mountains must never go away, because our preaching and our teaching has to continue forever for justice. And I don't know if you know it enough, but at the end of the Gospel of Matthew, is Jesus at the very end telling the disciples to go where? To the mountains. We've always got to have these mountains. Always. And when these sounds back here disappear, those mountains are going to stay forever. All right. All right. We've heard a lot of preaching today, a lot of teaching, a lot of mysticism here today, because these mountains are full of mysticism. We've heard a lot, but all that mysticism, by the way, has to come down to ground in politics. That's where it has to light. And I want to remind you today, as we stand in this spot here in Kanawha City, that on May 4th, 1960, John Kennedy walked this ground right here, this very ground right here, on May 4th, 1960. These are the words he said to us in those days. They are worthy to be heard again today. He said, "I am glad to come to West Virginia, to meet its people, to learn its needs, to hear its hopes. With your help, I hope to give this state and nation the kind of leadership the times demand in the White House. Not just a coordinator, not just a politician or orator, but a man who will truly be the president of the United States." And he goes on, as George Washington said, West Virginians in a dark hour of revolution. And these are great words from our first president. "Leave me but a banner to plant upon these mountains, and I will gather around me the men and women who will lift our bleeding country from the dust and set her free." Those words ring true today, that dust must settle forever. No more carbon dust on this state or this world. These words ring true for us today. Those mountains stand, and this challenge from our president in those days, president soon to be in those days, are words of challenge for us. He said this to us, and you remember these words so well. "Fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country." Today, you are doing it for your country right here in Kanawha City, the ground that our dear president came and visited. You are doing it, and you got to keep doing it by going to Washington, by going up the street and seeing Shelley, by going across and lighting on the doorstep of this governor, by going to Washington, by making this Jesus real, and by making the politics of mysticism the politics of justice in this country. God bless all of you, and happy season to all of you. Good season.
A moment's upon us for which many of us have waited all day. When you say the name Kennedy, you mean to say service. And an appreciation and a caring about all of America. I've been privileged to introduce a lot of people today, and it has been my honor. And this is one of the greatest honors I've ever had. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has gone from coast to coast and around the globe and picking up the torch that was lighted by his forebears. He carries Appalachia and Appalachia's problems in his heart wherever he goes. Through his voice, we know we are not forgotten. It was a couple of years ago when I heard Mr. Kennedy say down in the Coal River Valley that if they were doing what they are doing to West Virginia anywhere else in this country, the people doing it would be in jail. And when I heard him say that, it gave me goosebumps. And with his voice on Ring of Fire on the radio, he takes this issue, this problem in Appalachia, makes it national, makes it global, and speaks for all of you. Mr. Kennedy, please come and speak to us. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. And I'm really, really happy to be here in West Virginia. This state has a long relationship with the family. My uncle, John Kennedy, would not have been president of the United States if it weren't for West Virginia, if it weren't for the people of West Virginia. So there's a deep bond of affection between my family and between the people of this state. And, you know, I want to address these coal trucks and also the miners, who I just visited with over there and who presented me with this flag. And I want to remind all of us, today is Pearl Harbor Day, that West Virginians have a proud legacy that Washington knew about, that Lincoln knew about during the Civil War, that we've known in every war, that there's more enlistments from West Virginia. Per capita than any other state. There's more Medal of Honor winners from West Virginia than any other state. And there's more veterans per capita than any other state. And many of them enlisted in World War II on Pearl Harbor Day. I have members of my family who also enlisted and who died during that war. And they came home, and my Uncle Joe was killed during that war. My Uncle Jack was wounded badly during that war and came home with the West Virginia veterans. And they came home. They had fought in a war so that we could have a country where we had democracy, where we had dialogue, where we had transparency in government. We had transparency among people. A country that was not ruled by mob, by people shouting each other down, by using big machines to drown people out, and where people were not as frightened of dialogue. People did not have that cowardice, where they could not have a dialogue with their opponents and talk about issues together. And that's what this country stands for. That's what those proud West Virginians died for. That's what my Uncle Joe died for, what my father and my Uncle Jack fought for during World War II. My father came back from a trip to Appalachia once when I was a little boy, and he said to me, you know, this is the second poorest state in our country, and yet it should be the richest. It has the finest resources in all of America. And why is it, he wondered, it'd be the poorest state? And why is it that the counties of West Virginia that have the most coal are the poorest counties in the state? And that is because of the tyranny of an industry that is now liquidating the state for cash, literally, tearing down the mountains. Now, most of you are from the state of West Virginia. I'm not from the state of West Virginia. But I have also experienced a diminishment in my life and my children and their lives because of this industry. In the state of New York, I buy a fishing license for $30 every year. And yet, in almost every water body in the state, I can no longer eat the fish because they're contaminated with mercury from coal-burning power plants. The National Research Council, which is the arm of the federal government, and the National Academy of Sciences has just published a report in which they found, after studying 300 randomly chosen rivers and water bodies around the country, testing thousands and thousands of fish, that literally every freshwater fish in America is now contaminated with dangerous levels of mercury because of coal-burning power plants. One out of every six American women, according to CDC, now has so much mercury in her womb that her children are at risk for a grim inventory of diseases: autism, blindness, mental retardation, heart, liver, and kidney disease. There are 640,000 children born in this country every year who've been exposed to dangerous levels of mercury in their mother's wombs. I got my levels tested, mercury, recently, just out of curiosity, and I found out that my levels, I eat a lot of fish, a lot of freshwater fish, and I spend a lot of my time fishing. I learned that my levels of mercury in my body are about 10 times the level that EPA considers safe. I was told by Dr. David Carpenter, who's the National Authority on Mercury Contamination, that a woman with my levels of mercury in her blood would have children with cognitive impairment, permanent brain damage. I said to him, "You mean she might have?" And he said, no, the science is very certain now. Her children would have some level of permanent neurological injury, probably at my levels, IQ loss in those children of about 5 to 7 points. Well, that is one of the costs, Cole, that they don't tell you about when they say it's cheap and clean. We know that when they say it's clean, they're telling a lie, but they're also telling a lie when they say it's cheap, because we're paying the cost elsewhere when they dispose of waste in the air and the waterways of our country. I live 2 hours south of the Adirondack Mountains. This is the oldest protected wilderness in the face of the earth. It's been protected as forever wild since 1885. We had a right, the American people, to believe that generations of our citizens would be able to enjoy those pristine landscapes unspoiled. But today, one-fifth of the lake's Adirondacks is sterilized from acid rain that's coming those same coal-burning power plants, and which has also, incidentally, destroyed the forest cover. on the high peaks of the Appalachians from Georgia all the way up into northern Quebec. Well, that's one of the prices of coal that they don't tell you about when they say it's only 9 cents a kilowatt hour. They're not saying that also destroying all the private and public timber stands on the high peaks of the Appalachian, and that my family, we go fishing and we go camping, we go kayaking in the Adirondacks and we go skiing, that those landscapes have been permanently diminished because of coal, and that's one of the costs that they don't tell you about. If you go to EPA's website when you go home today, you'll see a Harvard study on that website that shows that there's 60,000 Americans who die every year from breathing ozone and particulates that come from coal-burning power plants. There's another study at the Natural Research Council and the National Academy of Sciences just did that said at least 20,000 Americans die every year from ozone and particulates. 1 million asthma attacks, 1 million lost work days a year. Those are part of the cost of coal that they don't tell you about when they say it's only 9 cents a kilowatt hour. The huge health care costs were recently evaluated by the federal government, and they say it's close to $156 billion every year nationally from coal. Now, University of Kentucky just did, I talked to some of the miners, my mining friends over there, and they say, well, this is bringing great prosperity to the state of West Virginia. But the University of Kentucky just did a study that showed to their state, and it's very similar here, there's no difference, that the cost of coal, there's a net cost, not a net profit to coal from the state, of $156 million a year. These are all part of the cost of coal that they don't tell you about when they say it's 9 cents a kilowatt hour. Now, I flew over the Cumberland Plateau recently, as I've done many times over the past 15 years, and I saw something. Honk if you love coal, honk if you love the mountaintops. I saw something that all of you have to live with. I saw something that if the American people could see it, there would be a revolution in this country. We are cutting down the Appalachian Mountains, these historic landscapes where Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett roamed that are so much a part of American culture. And and I was telling this to some of my friends from the coal industry just a few minutes ago, that the place that I live in Mount Kisco, New York, during the Pleistocene Ice Age 20,000 years ago, there were 2.5 miles of ice over the place where my home stands right now. And all of North America became a tundra. So the trees were gone everywhere. It was just grasslands and tundra. The only place that the forest survived were in a tiny refugium in West Virginia and eastern Kentucky in these Appalachian Mountains. And when the glaciers withdrew 12,000 years ago, the entire North America was reseeded from the seed stock in these mountaintops. These are the mother forests of all of our country, of all of North America. And as a result of that, they are the richest ecosystem in the hemisphere. There's more biodiversity per cubic meter than any other place in the hemisphere. And today, massy coal is succeeding in doing what the glaciers couldn't do, which is to cut down and flatten these landscapes and destroy these ancient forests that have, I always say, this is a moral issue. We don't have a right to destroy something that we cannot recreate. It was God who made these mountains, and it's Don Blankenship who is cutting them down. And wave your flag if you love the mountaintops. Now, when I saw, I flew over a drag line, these machines that are 20 stories high, they cost $500 million to build one machine. They practically dispense with the need for human labor, which indeed is the point. When my father was fighting strip mining in Appalachia back in the 60s, I remember a conversation that I had with him when I was 14 years old, where he said to me, they're not just destroying the environment, they're permanently impoverishing these communities because there's no way that they can regenerate an economy from these barren moonscapes that are left behind. And he said to me, they're doing it so they can break the unions. And that's exactly what they did. When he told me that, there were 46,000 unionized mine workers in the state of West Virginia digging coal out of tunnels in the ground. Today, there are fewer than 11,000 miners left in the state. About half of them are unionized because the strip industry isn't. And they're taking more coal out of West Virginia than they were in 1968. The only difference is, back then, at least some of that money was being left in the state for salaries and pensions and reinvestment in the community. Today, virtually all of it goes straight out of the state towards Wall Street to the big, the headquarters of Massey Coal, Arch Coal, Peabody Coal, and to the big banking houses like Morgan, Citibank, and Bank of America, which own these operations, which they obtained from people who swindled them from the people of West Virginia back in the 1880s. And they are literally liquidating this state for cash using these giant machines and 2,500 tons of ammonium nitrate explosives they detonate in Appalachia every single day. It's the equivalent of a Hiroshima bomb once a week. They're blowing the tops off the mountains to get the coal seams beneath. Then they take the rock, debris, and rubble, and they plow it into the adjacent river valley, and they bury the rivers, and they bury the valleys. According to EPA, they buried 2,000 miles of America's headwater streams and rivers and streams. This is a crime. You cannot do that in the United States of America. The Clean Water Act, it's a violation of the Clean Water Act. You can't take rock and debris and rubble and dump it into a river or water body without a Clean Water Act permit. So my friend, one of the great heroes of this state, as big a hero as any of the heroes of the American Revolution, Joe Lovett, sued. And he won the suit in front of a conservative Republican federal judge, Judge Charles Hayden. And Judge Hayden, during that case, you know, he had a colonel from the Corps of Engineers who was issuing these illegal permits. And Judge Hayden himself questioned the colonel, and he said, how did you ever start issuing these permits, which are so obviously illegal? And the Corps of Engineers colonel turned to him after a few minutes of silence. He said to him, I don't know, Your Honor, we just kind of oozed into it. Well, Judge Hayden issued a decision at the end of that case where he said exactly what I just said to you. It's all illegal. It's been illegal since day one, and he enjoined all mountaintop mining. But 2 days from when we got that decision, lobbyists for Peabody Coal and Massey Coal met in the back door of Gail North's Interior Department. Now, Gail Norton is currently under federal indictment, and they met. So these are criminals we're dealing with. When I say that, use that word, I don't use it loosely. And they met with Gail Norton's first deputy chief, Stephen J. Griles, who's now serving a 10-and-a-half-month jail sentence in the federal penitentiary. But too late for the mountaintops, and Stephen J. Griles was a former lobbyist for Peabody Coal and Massey Coal. And together, in a backdoor, darkened room of the Interior Department, away from all the democratic processes, away from public participation, away from the transparency that democracy is supposed to guarantee to our citizens, they rewrote these crooked lobbyists and this crooked public official. Honk if you love the mountains. Honk if you love the mountains. Flags if you love the mountains. wave your flag if you love America and you love West Virginia and you love the mountains of West Virginia, which are the heart and soul of this country. You know, when I was a little boy, and my father was trying to put in jail a corrupt leader from the Teamsters Union named Jimmy Hoffa. Every day in front of my house when me and my brothers and sisters were playing football on the front lawn, we had this happening. Big trucks coming by our property with their horns blaring and backfiring because they wanted to shut down a prosecution by intimidating us. Well, we're not intimidated by this. And we're not intimidated by the fact that we have corrupt public officials who are running this state, because we know that we live in a democracy and that it's our job to reclaim this democracy for the people of this state and for the children of this state, make sure we hand them a democracy and not a corrupt corporate plutocracy and chop down mountains. So, all of you hate mountaintop removal, and if you love America, God must have given everybody a day off. So, these crooked lobbyists and the crooked government official rewrote the interpretation of one word of the Clean Water Act, the definition of the word fill, to change 30 years of statute interpretation and to effectively overrule Judge Hayden's decision and make it legal not just West Virginia but every state in this country ostensibly to dump rock, debris, rubble, garbage, any solid material into any waterway in the United States. Now, a lot of these gentlemen I met over here said that they are fishermen and that they love fishing. Well, if that's true, why do they like it that it's made legal in this country to destroy the fisheries of this country and to destroy and to put rock and debris into our fishing systems and our fishing holes? This is not something that America stands for. Now, this is why I always say, you know, the polluters and their indentured servants in our political process, the corrupt public officials, the agencies they've captured, their slick PR firms like Burson Marcella, their phony think tanks in Washington, D.C., and their phony scientists, you know, who say it's okay to cut down mountains. We call them bioptitudes. They say, people in this agency here who say the same thing, you know, all of these, they've been very adept over the past few years at marginalizing environmentalists, at saying environmentalists are tree huggers or radicals or militants or pagans who worship trees and sacrifice people, as I heard the other day. But there's nothing radical about the idea of clean air and clean water for our children. And the mountains that God made, leave them like they made them. And, you know, we're not fighting for the environment for the sake of the fishes and the birds. We're fighting for it because we understand that nature is the infrastructure of our communities. And that if we want to meet our obligation as a generation, as a civilization, as a nation, which is to create communities for our children that provide them with the same opportunities for dignity and enrichment and prosperity and good health as the communities that our parents gave us, we've got to start by protecting our environmental infrastructure, the air we breathe, the water we drink, the wildlife, the fisheries, the public lands, the shared resources of our society, the commonwealth, the public trust assets, the things that are not susceptible to private ownership but by their nature are owned by all the people of the community. The rivers, the streams, the mountaintops that connect us to our path, to our history, that provide context to our communities, and that are the source ultimately of our values and our virtues and our character as a people. One of the things I said to the miners over here is that good environmental policy is identical to good economic policy. If we want to measure our economy based upon how it produces jobs and the dignity of jobs over the generations, over the long term, and how it preserves the value of the assets of our community. If, on the other hand, we want to do what Massey Coal and the big industry wants us to do, which is to treat the planet as if it were a business in liquidation, convert our natural resources, including the state of Virginia, to cash as quickly as possible, a few years of pollution-based prosperity, we can generate an instantaneous cash flow and the illusion of a prosperous economy, but our children are going to pay for our joyride, and they're going to pay for it with denuded landscapes and poor health and huge cleanup costs are going to amplify over time, and that they will never, ever be able to pay. Environmental injury is deficit spending. It's a way of loading the cost selfishly, of our prosperity onto the backs of our children. And one of the things I've done over the past 2.5 decades as an environmental advocate is to constantly go around and confront this argument that an investment in our environment is a diminishment of our nation's wealth. It doesn't diminish our wealth. It's an investment in infrastructure. The same as investing in telecommunications and road construction. It's an investment we have to make if we're going to ensure the economic vitality of our generation and future generations. Now, you know, somebody said that I said this was a criminal activity, and it is a criminal activity, and I don't use that word lightly. I was a prosecutor, and I know what it means and know the implication. But when you violate environmental law, and they are violating the environmental laws, clearly every day I came from Donaldism, one of the Appalachian River keepers, from showing from their own records, DEP's records, 10,000 violations of water quality standards against this industry over the past 10 years. 10,000 violations that they know about and that have not been enforced against. Why? Because the agency has been captured. Well, the crime. These are dangerous elements and chemicals and poisons that they're putting in our river system. Selenium, arsenic, lead, mercury. Now, this is real crime with real victims. If there's a pregnant mother and she eats a fish that's contaminated with lead or arsenic or selenium, and or a little girl who eats that stuff in a fish, and that little girl gets to fifth or sixth grade, and she can't solve a math problem as fast as she ought to be able to solve it because she has that kind of brain injury that those chemicals are known to impose on little children and growing fetuses, and she can't read a book as quickly as her classmates could, and she has to deal with the embarrassment and the humiliation and the diminished aspirations and the injury to her self-esteem that's caused by her not being able to do those things that, you know, God gave her the brain to solve that math problem and to read the book. And Don Blankenship and his greed took it away from her. Now, you could rob 100 banks and you wouldn't be committing a crime as heinous and as awful as that crime. And you tell me if I'm wrong about that. Now, let me ask you something else. If a foreign enemy of our country or a foreign terrorist organization came to this country and poisoned every fish in our country with mercury and poisoned 1 out of every 6 American women with mercury and poisoned, as the CDC says, 640,000 American children every year with a brain-killing poison, what would you call those people? What would you call that act? And what if they exploded 2,500 tons of ammonium nitrate explosives in one of the most beautiful states on Earth every week? What would you call them? So this is an issue. It's an issue of crime and getting away with it because you have the political clout to go into these agencies and capture them. And to use our campaign finance system, which is just a system of legalized bribery, to control these, you know, these crooked politicians and the state capitals on Capitol Hill. And it goes to the heart of who we are as a people, and it goes to our democracy. And destroying these wilderness areas is something that all of us, every American, should be offended by, because our country is so connected to wilderness. This is who we are. From the beginning of our national history, our great spiritual leaders and moral leaders and political leaders and cultural leaders were telling the American people, you don't have to be embarrassed or ashamed because you don't have 1,500 years of culture that they have in Europe. Because you have this relationship to the land, and particularly wilderness, which is the undiluted work of the Creator. And that's going to be the source of your values and your virtues and your character as a people. And if you look at every valid piece of American, classic American literature, whether it's Melville or Hawthorne or Mark Twain or Jack London or F. Scott Fitzgerald, the unifying theme, art, our literature, our poetry, the unifying theme is that nature is the critical defining element of American culture. And the Reverend who was just up here made a very, very important point, that this is where God talks to us. This is where we sense the divine. If you look throughout the history of mankind, through every religious tradition, the central epiphany always occurs in the wilderness. Buddha had to go to the wilderness to experience nirvana and self-realization. Muhammad had to go to the wilderness of Mount Horeb in the year 629 to wrestle the angel Gabriel and have the Quran squeezed from him. Moses had to go to the wilderness of Mount Sinai alone to find the commandments for the first time. Jesus Christ had to go to the wilderness for 40 days alone to discover his divinity for the first time. His mentor was John the Baptist, who lived in a cave in the Jordan Valley and dressed in the skins of wild beasts and ate locusts and honey. And all of Christ's parables were taken from nature. I am the vine, you are the branches, the mustard seed, the little swallows, the scattering the seeds in the fallow ground, the lilies of the field. He called himself a fisherman, a farmer, a vineyard keeper, a shepherd. The reason he did that, and the reason all the Old Testament prophets and the Quranic prophets and the Upanishad prophets, all the way back to pagan prophets like Aesop, all of them used parables and allegories and fables drawn from nature to teach us the difference between right and wrong, to teach us the wisdom of the Creator and what God looks like, what he wants us to do. And the reason they did that is because that's how he stayed in touch. They stayed in touch with the people. Christ was saying things that offended people, that contradicted everything they'd heard from the wealthy, established people of their time. He was saying that it's harder for a rich man to go to heaven than it is for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. This offended people. It offended all of society. And they would have dismissed him as a quack, but they were able to confirm the wisdom of his parables through their own observations of the fishes and the birds. And when we destroy our wilderness in this country, we destroy part of our own humanity, and we destroy part of our ability to sense the divine. So this is not just an economic issue. This is not just an environmental issue. This is not just an issue about democracy. It's all of those things, but it's also a moral issue. And we have an obligation to our Creator, to our country, to our children, to make sure that it stops at Coal River Mountain, and from then on, it never happens again. You're the soldiers in this army. Thank you very much. God bless America, and God bless West Virginia.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. We have heard his voice. He's heard yours. And in multiplication, you coming here today have been heard the world over. The words spoken here today have gone out over the World Wide Web live. You have been heard in Europe. You have been heard in Asia. You have been heard on Australia. You have been heard from corner to corner of this great nation. And now, having had your say, let us go in peace our ways home. But since there's been a lot of Bible talking, let me remind you of one other thing. Faith without works is dead. We have faith that Coal River Mountain will be sent. And we are willing to work to prove that faith. Go forth and work tirelessly, ceaselessly. Work. Work to save Coal River Mountain. Do it. Let them hear your voice in that building back there. Tell them Coal River Mountain will be saved. God bless you and good evening.
What you are about to hear is the audio of Monday, December the 7th, 2009's rally and protest to save Coal River Mountain in Charleston, West Virginia, at the headquarters of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. Although there are some issues with the audio, I think that you will find it both informative, stirring, exciting, and inspiring. It was certainly the pleasure of the Horn to be there. The audio begins with the remarks by Coal River Wind community organizer Lorella Scarborough.
The people who use us all, you and me too, are in this room telling the laws that this doesn't negatively impact anybody. We have people who don't have clean drinking water because of the toxins and the poisons that are dumped illegally, with the Department of Environmental Protection giving the permits and Governor Manchin allowing it. We are going to D.C. We are making progress. Sitterberg finally is a man of honor. He's the God that he was called to be. He made a public statement saying we have to stop mountaintop removal. He didn't say we have to stop coal. He said we have to stop mountaintop removal and we can continue to have jobs. We need coal jobs. We need green jobs. We need all the jobs we can get here. And you guys need to come with us to try to make sure that we all have a future here. Thank you.
Tell it, Lorella. Yeah, tough act to follow, no doubt. But that's all right. Because Katie Lauer's here, she's with Mountain Justice, she is an activist in her own right. And she can say a few words, too, I think. Katie, come on up.
How the hell do you follow that? Hi, everybody. My name is Katie Lauer. I'm here today as a member of Mountain Justice, but I'm also here today as a person that drinks water that comes from mountaintop removal waste sites, just like everyone else that lives on the East Coast. I live a few hours north of this city, and we have a lot of mining where I live. We have longwall mining, we have underground mining, and we have strip mining. And there's a lot of waste that comes from that kind of mining, and there's a lot of work that we have to do where I come from. But nothing that happens in my community compares to what is happening in Coal River. They're blowing up a mountain that is 200 feet from 9 billion gallons of toxic waste. And our government isn't doing a damn thing about it. Blowing up this mountain is insane. It takes away jobs that we could have permanent jobs from wind. It destroys our waterways forever. And it knocks islands that we can't ever put back. You can't make this water safe to drink. You can't clean up this site. And you can't put the mountain back. This is a hard fight, but I'm not going away. And no one that's standing here is going away until we stop mountaintop removal. We all deserve a safe place to live, and that means clean drinking water, and that means clean air. It's the DEP's job to make sure that that happens. And if they're not going to do it, it sure is a good thing that we're here to remind them, and we're here to go to the EPA and DC to tell them that the DEP here isn't doing their job, and the mountaintop removal needs to stop today. It's really amazing to see this many people out here, and we're going to save Coal River Mountain, and I'm really proud to be here with everyone today. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you for being here. Thank all of you who recognize that this is not a regional issue, not a local issue, but in fact a national issue and a global issue and beyond environmental, a human rights issue. Thank you. There's an award out there called the Goldman Environmental Prize. It was won this year, and bear in mind that it is considered the Nobel Prize for environmental work. It was won this year by a heroic lady who refuses to stand down in the face of violent opposition. It was won by Maria Gonneau. Maria is with us here today. Let's hear it for Goldman Environmental Prize winner, Maria Gonneau.
So let me say thank each and every one of you for coming out. I really appreciate you being here. All you Yale students, I know out there somewhere, woo! It doesn't take a science engineer to figure out mountaintop removal is wrong. And, you know, I hear a lot of comments about people telling us to go home. We are home. Let's make that clear. Let's make that clear. We are home. And, you know, I just get to thinking about this whole outsider thing, you know. I'm kind of convinced that anyone that's here to destroy the mountains is an outsider. You know, the people in West Virginia definitely need jobs, but the people that think that their jobs are more important than our water haven't had to live without water. I challenge you. You think it's hard to live without a paycheck? Try living with quart jars over your water faucets. Try living with nothing to give your children to drink. Paycheck's not important when you don't have water for your children. Coal River Mountain is the focus of this. Let's not lose that. Coal River Mountain, one way or the other, it's permanent. If they blow it up, it's gone. If they save it, it's ours. And some of the hardest working people in the state of West Virginia stands right here. And the really interesting thing is they're mostly volunteers. The Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition is who I work for. I proudly want to pronounce that. The Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition has brought more to the state of West Virginia than coal ever will. My children, I have a son that's getting ready to go into military right now. He's fighting for my rights, and he's fighting for yours, too. You keep that in mind. I will be here to fight for my rights. When my children are raised, they fully intend on coming back. We're building my son a home right now. We are here. We've been here for the past 10 generations, and we're not leaving so that anyone can have a job. If you can't have a job and be our kind neighbor, you go home.
Hard to argue with truth like that. Thank you, Maria. Well, let's take a little break. Paige Del Porto is here, musician extraordinaire, a little bit of entertainment for us. This man can play a song or two, I promise. You know, that's one of the beautiful things about all of us. We encompass the arts community, we encompass the science community, we encompass the human rights community, the environmental community. Everything that is good and decent about the United States of America stands here, stands right now. We are America. And it is unacceptable that people in West Virginia should be relegated to second-class citizen status so that 3.5 million pounds of the same explosives Timothy McVeigh used on Oklahoma City can be used on our mountains every day. And it ends at Coal River Mountain. Can I get an amen? You ready to go, Paige? Watch your step. All right. Relax. Enjoy. Tear it up, Paige.
Well, I was afraid I was going to sound too radical with my songs, but then I realized I was thinking about these people who got up here and spoke when I wrote these songs, these radical songs. That's a hard act, Lon.
Time's gone, comes round, better get into it, right? Come on, ride. Well, rocket, some pieces there, rockin' old and old, to fight a government, rockin' old. Well, sit right there, ass in a chair, call, don't give a damn, better get into it, right? Come on, ride. Well, rocket, rockin' load and load of fighter guns. We'll kick to the curb, don't say a word. Gonna get hurt, don't get a hand of mouth. No bailout, ain't no doubt. Better jump in the way. All right. Rockin' load and load of fighter guns. Rockin' roll, notify the girl. Come on, rock it up till the beat is there. Rock and roll. Drag line, landmine, don't cry, don't mind, strip mine, strip mine. Next kill, notify the girl. Rockin' rollin' on the fire. Rockin' rollin' on the fire.
Playing like that, you get out of tune.
old train holding away, holding away, holding away, holding away, holding away. Son of a bitch. Son of a bitch. Son of a bitch. Yes, I'm not a bone. I'm a
two radicals.
Where's vote? How many votes?
This next song is called Before the Morning Dew. Before the Morning Dew. This song I wrote this last time we were here at DEP. I wrote this song, and it's about the state of West Virginia, and after mountaintop removal has happened.
Now return. She
was laced with pearls and draped with fern. The prison velvet hue, old Sylvan never knew. Lies shattered now, and never to return. She was all for morning dew. How can it be the herald of dawn? Is the rising on another mountain down? Taken from this place, I long to see her face. I long to meet her hand, morning dew. She was born to fall, morning dew.
Thank you, Paige. Awesome. Just awesome. For a long, long time, Larry Gibson stood alone in this fight. But now he is surrounded by friends and neighbors and people of good conscience. And this rally wouldn't be right if Larry wasn't here. Please give a warm welcome to Larry Gibson.
Oh, that's what I've been working for 25 years, for that sound, boy. I've been across this street more times than once, and what I do when I go across the country, I call for the birth of resistance. Look like I have found it. Let them know I have found the birth of resistance here. Let them know you're fucking back. Let them know. Yes, now, I have never hid the fact that I am against coal, but I'll tell you one thing. Before we can do away with coal, we gotta go ahead and find jobs for the people back there. I'm not a heartless person here, you know. But the one thing we gotta do, I've been for coal for 20 years now. I mean, for money. For to get these people jobs. Now I wanna tell you something. You come to my mountain, I can show you what coal mountain's gonna look like next year from now. Okay? You know what a decapitated mountain looks like? Dead. Dead. As dead can get. Put these people back here, these miners in a position where they have to do this type of work, they ain't got no damn choice. We got to get them a choice. It's our responsibility too, you know. We got to give these people a choice. That's what it's about. We are a country who we say we hear about people, let's start showing it. Right? Now, I want to tell you something. When I want destroyed old mountain, I'm sitting on a mountain that's already been destroyed. How you like to watch that every damn day? Now, these people sitting back here, they don't need to be in that position to destroy their own backyard. What do you get out of destroying your own backyard? Not a damn thing. You people step up to the plate and start owning up to something. We got to do something today. We got to end this thing called mountaintop removal. We got to end this thing called coal. We're supposed to be the strongest country in the whole damn world, the most civilized country in the whole damn world, the most educated country in the whole damn world. And you mean that we only came 2 feet from cavemen mentality, and we're now using, what do you call it, the most barbaric form of energy called coal? That's crazy in hell. Let them know about it. Speak up. Yo. I want to tell you something. This country of ours, this state of ours, is a part of what they call a third world country in a country. And the United States has done it to us. And we got to take it back. I'm tired of being called a third world country in West Virginia. We're not a third world country. We count. We're somebody. And let them know that. Let them know that. You people stand up now and start owning up to the responsibility. We have to bring job diversity in here for these people. We have to give something back to these people too. We have to make it, well, every one of us is getting something from this. Not just something like the coal industry is doing right now. The coal industry is dividing us right down the middle. One time 100 years ago, a man said, what if they come to organize your place? What are you going to do when they're organizing unions? And the man says, I just have half the people kill the other half. You know, that's been working. We got to end that today. We got to start fighting for all the people who live in West Virginia and throughout Appalachia who are destroying the mountains and the land for coal. That's not the answer. There's no future in it. Let me hear you now. Let me hear you now. I am calling for the rebirth of existence across the whole damn country, not just in West Virginia, but wherever I go. I want to hear people say, yes, I'm ready to fight for the future of all of our people. Not some. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Next up, Joe Stanley. Hey, Joe. Joe also is a retired miner. Joe also has worked honorably in that industry. And Joe knows the truth when he sees it. Joe Stanley.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming out here today. I appreciate you getting the opportunity of getting to talk to you. My name is Joe Stanley. I'm a native of Wayne County. I'm a retired UMWA member. And I want to tell everybody here that I'm not anti-coal. I'm anti-mountaintop removal mining. I had a speech here today, and I'm going to read some of it. I'll jump around on it a little bit because most of all, everything that I could say has been said by people much more informed on this process even probably than I am. Mountaintop removal is a destructive process. Entire mountaintops and ridges are blasted away, sometimes removing up to 800 feet of mountain. The resulting debris, the rock, the clays, the inner and outer burdens, and coal containing heavy metals are dumped into nearby streams and valleys, killing every living thing, totally destroying the ecosystem. Communities near these mountaintop removal mining sites experience serious harm, blasting dust, noise, and damage to homes and water supplies. Approximately 2 to 3 million pounds of explosives are used every day to dislodge the overburden. The seismic activity from the blast fractures the underlying strata and allows heavy metals to enter the aquifers below the mining activity. The dust created by these explosions harm the people and the wildlife that are in the surrounding area. When the ammonia nitrate explosives are detonated, the chemical-laden dust and silica produced, now airborne, is known to cause health issues. Dust created by the equipment, the trucks, the dozers, and the loaders endangers the health of the people, property, and ecosystems that surround these operations. Mountaintop removal mining also creates flooding issues that affect the communities. The people and the ecosystems surrounding these operations. OSM confirmed that flooding was a problem. Drinking water supplies, such as wells, springs, and cisterns, are affected by mountaintop removal mining operations, as shown by numerous suits pending in the court systems at this time. Even if the residents can get a water line from city or county to replace their impaired water, they now have to pay a high price for the water, which used to be free. The quality of the water supplied by cities and county systems has no provisions to move the heavy metals that are contained in the sources of this water. Between 1,200 and 2,000 miles of streams have been buried by mountaintop removal mining. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers testified in court that they have done no studies to determine the long-term effects of mountaintop removal mining. Approximately 1.4 to 2 million acres of the most diverse ecosystem forest area have been destroyed by mountaintop removal mining. More than 200 vertebrate wildlife species have been affected. Downstream of the valley hills created by mountaintop removal mining, elevated levels of conductivity, total sulfates, total dissolved solids, and selenium have been found, which adversely affect the aquatic life in the streams. The U.S. EPA is concerned about the accumulative effect of mountaintop removal mining. The communities and the culture of West Virginia are being destroyed. Why is West Virginia paying such a high price so the rest of America can have cheap energy? What will be the true cost of this form of mining? The accumulative effect of so many operations has to be considered. This practice is irreversible. The destruction and the pollution will be with us for generations to come. The Coal River Mountain is the last mountain standing in that area. Studies have proven that sufficient wind exists to support construction of a wind farm. This would result in long-term employment, not just temporary jobs for equipment operators. Blasting is occurring within a short distance of the Brushy Fork impoundment. This impoundment is on a list of 15 impoundments currently being studied by the Office of Surface Mining for the potential for basin breakthrough relative to requirements and guidelines in West Virginia coal-related dam safety rules, Bureau of Mines Information Circular 18-8741, and MSHA Procedure Instructional Letter. This impoundment contains approximately 8 billion gallons of toxic coal slurry. This dam is being raised to hold more slurry, even though it is less than 200 feet to old mines directly underneath the impoundment. The blasting that is occurring fractures the underlying strata, which could allow the face of the dam to slip or the bottom failure to occur. West Virginia DEP is currently understaffed. The leadership of West Virginia DEP doesn't seem to care about the citizens' rights to be protected from the adverse effects of surface mining, as the SMCRA laws state. They don't seem concerned about enforcing the Clean Water Act. West Virginia DEP authority needs revoked, and federal agencies need to take over control and enforce the laws of the U.S. The other thing I would like to say is that I worked my first 14 years of my mining career as non-union. The rest of it was as a union employee. I was president of a local union that had 800 guys in it, and we had surface miners, underground mines, we had all of them. Mountaintop removal has got to stop. We've got to sit down with the industry, with the environmentalists and the people who are being directly affected, and with the government, if not on the state level, on the federal level, and work through this and put a stop to this and move forward with coal for the next 25 years. Until we can make the jump to alternative sources of energy. I would like to say that Senator Byrd, in his speech last Thursday, clarified a lot of issues, and we've worked tirelessly, and he has invested a lot of investigation and a lot of time into gathering the facts, and his decision will clarify this situation in a short period of time. Thank you, everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. All right, now it took she was a long. It took Amanda Starbuck from the Rainforest Action Network a bit of a trip to get here. She comes here from San Francisco via the old country whence so many of us came. She comes from Wales. Amanda Starbuck, come on up.
Thank you, everybody, for welcoming me here today. It's wonderful to be here, and thank you for all that you do to save the mountains. It is no small coincidence that today, on this day, the leaders of the world are coming together in Copenhagen to talk about how to solve global warming and how to switch to a clean energy future. And it is no coincidence that people across this country and across this world are standing with the people of Coal River and demanding a clean energy future. We know it is our duty to do this for the health of our families, to provide jobs for our children, and to protect our climate. We know that a clean energy future is not just possible, it is essential. Let me tell you about where I come from. I come from a mountain region in Wales. And 25 years ago, the coal industry that had been supporting our communities for centuries abandoned us. They busted the unions, they shut down the mines, they left us without jobs, and they left our communities polluted. It was hard. It was real hard times. But we did not lie down and take it. The people of Wales found new solutions for themselves. We invested in clean energy. We built wind farms. We invested in hydropower, in wood fuel. We know that within 15 years, we're going to be able to get all of our electricity from renewable energy, and we are no longer slaves to the coal industry. So it can be done. And here in West Virginia, you have got it all. You've got the power of the wind. And most importantly, you have the power of the people. You can do it. And I have every reason to believe that here in Appalachia, we can start a revolution for a clean energy future. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. All right, time to bring up one of the heroes of the fight against the destruction of the planet. Mike Wazell has been at this longer than most of us can even imagine, from coast to coast, and Mike recognizes that the heart and soul of the fight for the planet is right here in West Virginia. Mike Wazell, come up.
Ah, thank you very much. It's very good to be here. Thank you all for coming out. My name is Mike Wazell. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. And I'm here representing Climate Ground Zero, which is a sustained campaign of nonviolent direct action to stop mining on Coal River Mountain. Let's hear ya. Civil disobedience is only justified under certain conditions. One of those is that an imminent and irreparable harm is occurring that puts our communities at threat. Mountaintop removal not only threatens our communities, it threatens our atmosphere, it threatens our forests, it threatens our rivers, and it threatens our health. The other thing that's necessary is that we have exhausted all of our other remedies. Our politicians are corrupt. Our courts are corrupt. We cannot get justice in the state of West Virginia. Mountaintop removal now is illegal under the most important environmental laws that we have in this country, laws that protect every other state, but they don't protect West Virginia. This is a violation of our 14th Amendment rights to equal protection under the law. And the other part is in order to engage in nonviolent civil disobedience, we must have a belief that our actions will make a difference. And I think the 150 people who've been arrested over this last year, shutting down strip mining, protesting at the DEP, at the governor's mansion, anywhere where they'll listen to us, I think they've made a difference. I think we're put in prison right now, and we're going to force them to do their job. Thank you very much.
A little ago, we heard from one of our winners of the Goldman Environmental Prize. We're very fortunate to have two. And our first winner of the Goldman Environmental Prize is here with us today. And she's living proof that dynamite comes in small packages. Judy Bonds is here. Let's bring her up. Big round of applause, Judy Bonds.
Hello. Hey, guys. Got something to tell you. About 100 years ago, Mother Jones says there's no justice in West Virginia. Amen, Sister Jones, because that's still true today. There's no justice in West Virginia. Over 100 years ago, the greed and corruption of the coal industry stole our great state. We're here to take it back today, starting with Coal River Mountain. The pro-coal thugs talk about patriotism, but yet they support a Russian coal company that bombs our Appalachian communities. Is that patriotism? Pro-coal is anti-American. I praise our Senator Robert Byrd for recently speaking out. But dear honorable Senator, they're not listening to you. Their arrogance and their greed has consumed their souls. Honk if you love mountains! 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 Honk, honk, baby, honk! Coal has corrupted our state government, and the feds need to come in and take over the state government of West Virginia, all the way from the governor to the dog catcher, especially the governor of West Virginia. Guys, the things that we say and do here today is for our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, so that they'll have a chance to live, so they'll have basic human rights and basic life's necessities. No matter what consequences today to me or to you or anyone in the present day, the time has come to stand up and say, stop poisoning our babies! Stop poisoning our babies! Our children will read and will hear about our struggles. Thank God for the internet. They'll hear about our struggle for their future and to save their lives. So I ask you to remember that and keep that close to your heart when the struggle is the hardest every day. Keep that close to your heart. The whole world is watching Appalachia. The whole world is listening about Coal River Mountain. We are ground zero to save the earth, the only place we know is home. Always know that I love you and I honor you. Onward, onward to save our species, never back down. Thank you.
Never give up, never surrender. Thank you, Judy. Up next, a speaker by proxy, if you will. Tamatea wanted to be here, but she couldn't. So we have a committed activist, Stephanie Pistello, from Appalachian Voices, to share with you a few words of encouragement from Ms. Matea. Stephanie?
Thank you, Bob. So this is from Kathy, and it's a real honor to get to read her words. Honk if you love mountains!
I'll give you Law of Mountains. My friends and fellow West Virginians, I regret I couldn't be with you today, but I have been privileged to hear Mr. Kennedy's articulate and passionate stance on this issue, and I hope you're as moved by his words as I was when the first time I heard him speak about mountaintop removal. Also, I am heartened by Senator Byrd's thoughts on mountaintop removal and the larger conversation around coal in general. His thoughtful stance and call for peace and civil discourse raised my hopes immensely and make me proud to be a West Virginian. I've been humbled by the people I've met who are standing up against impossible odds to say, this is not right. Their courage through excruciating anguish, their staunch determination and tenacity have been my inspiration in my whole life. Our friends, Judy, Beau, Vernon, Maria, and the rest, are not fighting with fists or guns. There's no intimidation here, no violence. Honk if you love mountains. Let him hear you, everybody! Woo! We love mountains! As she said, there's no intimidation here and no violence. They're trying to find solutions for everyone, so that all people in southern West Virginia can thrive. Solutions such as a wind farm atop Coal River Mountain, a viable alternative to that blatant destruction and interruption of life and safety and peace and sense of place. That can provide sustainable energy and jobs for all. We are asking consideration. We're asking for compassion. We're asking for the real human need and the dreadful cost of the destruction of Coal River Mountain to be seen, to be honored. We're asking to be acknowledged as brother and sisters and fellow West Virginians. If we build the prosperity of some on the exploitation and disregard for others, we all lose. We all lose. No one here, no one is disposable. Not these local environmental activists working so hard to save the beloved mountains and homes, and not the miners and their families who need a source of income, jobs, and security. Can we see each other through our fear, our grief, our rage? Can we extend ourselves to affirm that common humanity and those whom we oppose? We are brothers and sisters in conflict, faced with a common problem. Can we work towards a common solution? Can we? Yes, we can. Everyone wants to feel safe where they live. Thank you. I'm Kathy Matea. Who loves mountains?
Yes, we do. It's time to bring up a man who has been a voice of conscience in the Episcopal Church in West Virginia for a long, long time, who has fulfilled and followed the mission propounded by Jesus Christ in West Virginia, Reverend Jim Lewis.
I don't know. I don't know whether I believe in reincarnation or not, but I just heard, and when Judy spoke, I just heard Mother Jones back here in West Virginia. I don't know how many of you remember, and I know a lot of you out there do remember this, but Mother Jones came here to town, to Charleston, right downtown, right on Capitol Street. But before she got to Capitol Street, they arrested her right on the river down here. She was here to talk to Governor Crystal Peter in those days. And she spoke the word, and we heard it today from Judy Bonds, the same Mother Jones back with us here in West Virginia. It's Christmas time, so I can't pass that up, a little bit of time. Also to my brothers and sisters in the Jewish community, happy Hanukkah to you. And also to remember that this is the time we're selling Christmas trees up here. By the way, up close to where Congresswoman Capito's office is. Which means that when you leave here, at least not today maybe, but sometime soon, pay a visit on her and talk with her about these mountains that we want to keep here. I think you got to remember as we call for our guest speaker to speak here in a moment, that this Jesus that was just mentioned at the Christmas time in our season that means so much to us here in these mountains was the same Jesus who went up on the mountain to deal with the devil and tempted by money and power. And that's exactly what we are doing right here now, going to that mountain which must never be destroyed, so that we can meet the devil face to face, and we know where he is, and say, we are going to persevere, and these mountains are going to stand forever. Yeah. It was on these mountains that Jesus went to preach and to teach. And by the way, there's a great old saying that says, if you have to preach, you know, use words, but if you can't, use words if you have to, but preach with your body and with your life. That's where Jesus went, to that mountain. And those mountains must never go away, because our preaching and our teaching has to continue forever for justice. And I don't know if you know it enough, but at the end of the Gospel of Matthew, it's Jesus at the very end telling the disciples to go where? To the mountains. We've always got to have these mountains. Always.